That was beautiful, I thought.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yes.
Ah, God is so good. He's doing such lovely things these days. Did you notice that he is?
Yeah. Yes.
Or are you busy watching that other stuff?
You're ringing quite a bit.
I'm ringing? Want to get married? Do you want to cut me down just a little bit on the high end? We'll see if this is getting better. Huh? We have so many things to be thankful for. I mean, Disneyland is closed, so Jen could do worship today.
Yeah.
Village is closed, so Luke can be with us today. It's also so interesting. Welcome to the New World Order. Who is running the world? That's not a question. That's a statement. The World Health Organization is effectively in charge of the entire world right now. Did anybody foresee this? Like, this is how fast it can happen. Like, how many theologians do you think have been racking their heads about what's going to look like and what has to happen first? And absolutely nothing has to happen first, because it can happen in a heartbeat. Because just watch what just happened. Fear raised its ugly head, had horns, and you could see the tail twitching behind it. Fear is all over the world, and people are bowing to it faster than we could ever believe. People are no longer thinking, they're reacting in fear. It's an amazing thing. Oh, by the way, good job on washing hands. I mean, you learned that really well. This week we'll be working on colors and shapes. This week, a week ago today, we said goodbye, earthly goodbye, to a friend who was having his earthly birthday. He was 76 years old, and celebrating his birthday, he also celebrated his first day in heaven. What a way to go. My goodness. Pastor Ron and Bonnie were there, and Deborah was there saying, hasta la vista, baby, to her husband, because he's waiting for you. And I heard he can dance now. Yeah. And he's in heaven. We miss Ted. Yeah, she's handled it like a trooper. She's been amazing. So anyway, she may forgive you if you give her a hug during this time of personal space giving.
No, I hug.
I think you have to wear a sign that, you know, like. Takes away personal liability if you're hugged. It's a different time, isn't it? There is a whole different sense in everything we're doing right now. And so we need to. Bob asked me a question this morning, and it's sort of the crux of what I want to talk about today, and it's what is significant? What is significant right now? Who is significant right now? And I don't mean the World Health Organization. Where do we need to keep our focus? And it's so vitally important that we remember that. I had I'll read it in just a second. I got some really interesting things to go over with you. I think they're interesting. You may not find them interesting, but where does anxiety come from, you ask? It comes from a separation mindset. Like your mind gets going in a certain direction and you feel alone. Isolation is a tool of the enemy. You watch in the natural what the wolves, what the lions, what... Hello, David. What they want to do is get someone alone, get one of their prey alone, and then it's easy pickings. And the idea is to get us alone because we're easy pickings too, because our minds can go faster than we can go. Now, we've been working with everybody, trying to get everybody to build personal devotion times, times in the Word, times in prayer, personal times of worship, personal soaking times. And that's been a significant portion of what we've taught for the last 5 years. If you paid attention, you're ready for today. If you haven't, get your notes out. Because it's important. Where does anxiety come from? It comes from a separation mindset. What is the remedy? To know that you are connected to the flow of God's unconditional love. That you are not alone in a loveless and dark and cruel world. Isn't that an interesting definition? They say in anxiety, if you're having an anxiety attack, you know, and I've been with people having anxiety attacks, and they are not logical. People that are having anxiety, you can't talk to them logically. Their name isn't important. You aren't important. They are just freaking out because their brain is in overload, and they can't even breathe properly. So they give you five things to remember, and it's just, look, the first one is, look around you, identify five things that you can see, five things that you can actually see with your eyes. Then there are, hear four things with your ears, identify four distinct sounds. And the third one is, identify three pleasant smells around you. What are you smelling? Right? Find two things that you can touch and identify. And then find one thing that you can taste and identify. That grounds you to your senses. And by the time you've actually done the one taste one, every single person that will go through that is no longer in anxiety attack. Right? And it's just a grounding again. And so what we see in the world right now is mass anxiety. People acting incredibly stupid. The coronavirus is the tool right now. And fortunately, I work with Dr. Wes here, and so he keeps me up to date on what the latest is on how to identify all this stuff. So I've been happy to go through all this. And as you're going through it, you need to stay grounded. And not be stupid. Like, people are buying toilet paper. Now, well, it's working because people are in such high anxiety. Like the precept, I think, was that the toilet paper is coming from China, and it's being cut off there. So therefore, our supplies will be cut off. Now, that's an interesting thought. Right? Did that make sense? Because the paper plant I grew up about 10 blocks away from, it was called Scott Paper at the time, in New Westminster. They just put on a second shift, and they're very happy to deliver you a semi-truckload tomorrow morning if you want it. It's right here. Like, we're just, people are not processing. Get five things you can see, four things that you can hear. You know, ground yourself in the Lord first. What is it that the Lord is saying? Have you built into your life a personal prayer time? Do you have a regular Bible reading program? Those are the things that will ground you. I've sounded like a broken record for years, but now I'm going, yes, God, you were right. It's all about Him, and He really is in charge of this thing. The devil thinks he's got us all, but he doesn't.
Right.
Do wash your hands. It's important. Oops. What's falling? Okay. Water is falling, is falling, is falling. Oh. Well, I had a wonderful quote from Martin Luther. Where are you, Martin? There he is. Martin Luther, when he was dealing with the Black Death, that was a horrible thing. Didn't you go through that? No. It's in the 1500s. So. Steve, you might. No. It's Steve's birthday today, and I'm not going to tell anybody that he's 80. I know somebody at the Scott Paper Plant, so you just call me. Martin Luther said, as he's going through that and people are going crazy, he said, I shall ask God mercifully to protect us. Then I shall fumigate, help purify the air, administer medicine and take it. I shall avoid places and persons where my presence is not needed in order not to become contaminated and thus perchance inflict and pollute others and so cause their death as a result of my negligence. If God should wish to take me, he will surely find me, and I have done what he has expected of me, and so I am not responsible for either my own death or the death of others. If my neighbor needs me, however, I shall not avoid place nor person, but I shall go freely as stated above. See, this is such a God-fearing faith because it is neither brash nor foolish and does not tempt God.
Wow.
Isn't that a balanced way to look at things? So he says, I'm gonna wash my hands. I'm going to be careful to clean everything. And by the way, Tammy cleaned every little nook and cranny around this place and antiseptic'd every place that your hands are going to go. You are in good stead here. So well done, Tammy. We're gonna fumigate, you know, like we need to do that. And we do not need to act presumptuously. But we do need to hear God. Do what the government is asking us. So if there's any more than 250 people here, I'm afraid we can't meet. Some of you will. Oh, there isn't more than 250. So. We need to be paying attention to what the government is saying. Honor the government, not fly in their face and cause a ruckus and, you know, bring God's name into ill repute, you know. We get such weird ideas about we'll be treated differently because we're Christians. We had a guy in church years ago. He was kind of on the periphery of church life, and And he got picked up for DUI, drinking under the influence, one night.
Driving
under the influence, yeah. Thank you for correcting me. It makes way more sense. Driving under the influence. And it was on one of those, comp programs. They happened to be there and filming him. And so they're putting him in the back seat of the cop car with cuffs on, and he's yelling, "I'm a Christian. I go to this church. You don't need to arrest me." I got a bunch of calls from people saying, "Why is he doing that?" We don't want to be presumptuous about God. Now, God is able. And he will do if we're following what he is doing, if we're joining him in what he is already doing. John G. Lake in South Africa, during the bubonic plague, another little toss-up. He was ministering in the hospital areas and praying for people, and people were getting well, and some interns from England came, and they said, you can't be touching people. You're going to die before you get to the end of the bubonic plague. If you could wake up in the morning and be dead at night, it would happen that fast. So he said, "Bubonic plague has no hold on me." And they said, "It does, sir." And so he said, "Well, let's look at it." And so they put active culture of bubonic plague into his palm. He closed his hand, and then he gave it back to them, put it in a culture dish. They checked it out. It was alive when it went into his hand. It was dead when he put it into the culture dish. God did that, and John G. Lake had the faith and the prophetic utterance to move in that. Now, do you know that in that room, a number of Christians died that day? It wasn't every Christian that got to do that. It was God moving in an anointed vessel. We are not to presume, but we are not to act in fear. Right? That's why we've been working on hearing the voice of God. Then you have a confidence. Oh, well, sort of a confidence, because when I hear his voice, I kind of go, "I hope this is you." and we move ahead tentatively. But we don't move ahead without him. Just because we've read it and just because other people are doing it does not mean that we are called to it. Do you understand? Just because it sounds good and it sounds like, "Oh, this is the mighty way to go," does not mean that you're called to be a part of it. We need to hear God. God could be using us in that. And we're not to just kind of, "Oh, they're doing it." Like, look at around us. There are churches that are meeting and there are churches that are not meeting. So who's right? I'll tell you that the spirit of the age will tell you to draw the line and say, they're either right or they're wrong. And I'll tell you that that is wrong. Because each leadership team has to hear from God.
Right.
It may be right for them to close. It also may be right for them to be open. There is no easy answer in all of this. Because it relies on relationship.
Right.
It's all relationship driven. The answer to it all and the significance of it all is Jesus.
Amen.
Jesus. Just like Bible college, the answer is always Jesus. It'll get you through. You know, people are trying to be. I'm going to get to the scripture, so don't. Like, this will be a legitimate meeting, honest. You have to open the scriptures for it to be like that's a law, you know. people are. They trot out statistics before we have statistics. And so they're saying, well, this isn't a big deal because only 8 people have died. We're at the very beginning of this thing, you know? And so give me statistics at the end. Right? That's when statistics start to matter. Statistics right now are useless to us, other than to know that a certain number of a certain demographic will die. But even then, you have to be careful. Because all of our first statistics were coming out of China. And in China, almost 70% of men over 65 smoke. Most of the women do not smoke. So most of the over 65 deaths that we're seeing, 14% of the people over 65 are dying. It's those that have lung problems to start with, and this is a respiratory illness. The men are dying. Men are dying faster than women, so it's affecting women, and it's not affecting women, it's affecting men, and it's all affecting older men. It's not just older men, it's older men with a smoking situation. They've been smoking all of their lives. And so you need to know what's behind statistics, right? And we've got to be so careful. People used to cough in church to hide passing gas. Now they'll pass gas to hide a cough. Because you don't want to be coughing in church, you know, somebody's going to think you got it, you know. That's not permission, David. One of the things when you study mental illnesses and how to deal with mental illnesses is to make fun of whatever is frightening you. You bring it down a level, right? If you can laugh at it somehow. And so I'm trying to throw a little of that in there. Because it's bizarre what's out there. Like, people are believing weird things. And so if somebody's walking around and they're sneezing and stuff is running out of their nose and, oh, they've got coronavirus. You do not. A runny nose affects less than 5% of the people with confirmed coronavirus. If you got a runny nose, there's a pretty good chance you got a cold. Just a regular old, what they call common cold. Has nothing to do with coronavirus. But there is fear out there. And fear is driving this whole thing. And if we give in to fear, we will become a part of it. But God has a higher calling for us. He wants us not to do that. Not to be driven by fear. So I want to talk about somebody today that wasn't fearful. So in 2 Kings 17. This is a story about David and Goliath. And I just wanted to read. I'm sorry. I was going to go to 2 Kings 2nd, but I want 1 Samuel 17. Okay. I lied in the pulpit. I'm sorry. I repent. 1 Samuel 17. And I wanted to go to 11 first. So the story is that the Philistines are on one mountain, The Israelites are lined up and Saul is the king, and they're lined up on another mountain, and there's a valley in between. And every morning this giant and the dimensions I have are that he's over 9 feet tall, maybe 10 feet tall. He's a big guy. When you consider that they say that King David was just over 5 feet tall. Right? So he's like double David's size. Yeah, I think he qualifies as giant. Oh. Pardon me? He's a giant. There you go. Thank you. He's a giant. I think he qualifies as a giant, right? And so he'd come out and he'd challenge anybody. Somebody come out and fight me. You beat me, we'll be your slaves. We beat you, you're our slaves. And it avoids everybody getting into a big tussle and lots of people dying. But so what was Israel's response to that? In verse 11 it says, when Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, that's Goliath they're talking about, they were A, dismayed, and B, greatly afraid. The nation was greatly afraid. They didn't know how to respond. There was a mass hysteria. No one was willing to go out against this thing. No one was willing to challenge this guy, including Saul, who was supposed to be head and shoulders taller than any of his men. Saul's a big guy, but he's not quite a giant. But Saul wasn't about to go after him. Saul had no champion. So David, who's a boy, he's sent by his dad with a bunch of cheese sandwiches one day to go and make sure everybody's fed. And so he drives into camp and he hears this challenge and wonders, what on earth is happening here? How is this guy getting away with challenging the people of God? Why are you guys letting this guy do this? Why is this happening? And so he goes through his thing and finds out that he can marry the king's daughter if he does it. And he gets, he'd not have to pay any taxes for his whole life. That's pretty good. That sounds good to him. So he says, I want to go. I want to do it. Little kid. He said, qualifications, slayed a bear, slayed a lion. Well, not many of the other guys would have been able to say that. So sounds good. Good resume. Bring this kid in. So he comes in and Saul says, okay, I'll give you my armor. Now Saul is a head and shoulders taller than anybody else there, right? So you know his armor is going to be too big. David puts it on, can't move properly. He can't. There's lots of significance in this. I want to stay with the fear thing. So I'm not going to get into a full teaching about what the armor was about and why he couldn't go in Saul's armor, but it was good reasons. So David takes off the armor, picks up 5 smooth stones, has his sling, and he goes out to the battle. Goliath is spewing things about David and things about David's God. Now, David's not concerned about his own well-being here. He's not concerned about his own reputation here. He has a righteous anger in him that says, you can't say those things about my God. You cannot say those things about my God. And he takes that and runs toward his enemy. He runs toward his enemy. It's not a tentative one foot after the other. He is going for this thing. This is it. Of course, he kills him, cuts his head off with Goliath's own sword, and wins the day. Because he wasn't afraid. Now David was, we don't know him as a stupid man. We don't know him as an ignorant man. I bet he was afraid. But he moved with courage. John Wayne says that courage is,
it's being afraid, but saddling up anyway.
So David saddled up, rode into battle, and won the day. He wasn't afraid. For those of you that have never seen a John Wayne movie, that was a good imitation. Now, you might say, well, that's good, but we know David knew that his destiny was to be king at that time. And so he was acting in faith to know that he was going to do this thing because he was not yet king, and his kingdom would not exist if he lost the day. So he was just acting prophetically. You can say that if you want. I think he was a human, and he acted in a very human way. But there were four lepers in a siege in 2 Kings 7, 2 Kings 7, verse 3. Let me see if I can find it. 2 Kings. It's in the same neighborhood as. Is that it? Yeah. Now, there were four men who were lepers at the entrance of the gate. And they said to one another, "Why are we sitting here until we die?" So they're in a pickle. The Syrians are all around them, and the Syrians are a superior force, and they have everybody so afraid that they're inside their castle walls, and they've run out of food. So much have they run out of food that a prophecy that they received about how much you would be willing to pay for just a little bit of pigeon poop to eat. Pigeon poop. They were paying big bucks for pigeon poop in that day. That's how bad things were. They're inside the gates. Everybody is fearful because the enemy of fear had risen against them. They had lost their connection with God. God is the God of Israel, but Israel had forgotten God. No connection. They are afraid. Syrians are going to take us and kill us. So there's four little lepers. Know what a leper is, Ray? Where do lepers have to live when everybody else is living normally? Outside the camp. Yeah. So they're not welcomed like normal people, right? You know what living like a leper means? You know, you ever felt that way? People don't accept you. They don't know who you really are. Well, these guys lived that way. No one knew who they really were because lepers weren't allowed inside. They're living outside. They're going to die. They know it. There's no food. So they say, okay, let's look at this thing reasonably. They're connected. They're trying to do the right thing. They're thinking this thing through. So we can go back into the city. We're going to die anyway, so the worst thing they can do is kill us. But maybe we'll find some food. Well, then one of them would have said, there's no food there. They're paying big bucks for pigeon poop. Okay, Well, then what's our other alternatives? Well, there's only one other alternative, and that's to turn ourselves into the Syrians. So they're going to give themselves up to the Syrians. The four of them are going to walk out into the Syrian camp, give themselves up, and hope that the Syrians are merciful to them. That's the best possible alternative for them. Because the worst things the Syrians can do is kill them. They're going to die anyway. So they get up, and they walk out into the camp, not knowing that during the night, God had made fear fearful. God had put such a fear in the camp of the people who had made Israel so afraid that they all left. They left so fast that they left their armor. No, it's okay. They left their armor. They left their food. They left their clothing. They left their riches. Everything. Their tents were in place. Their groceries were there. They left it all and took off. Hey, yeah, there probably was. Lots of toilet paper there. You get the picture. So they walk out and they can't believe their eyes. They all grab drumsticks and they're chewing them down and they, look at this. What should we do with this? And so these four outcasts, they could have reveled in this. They could have enjoyed this for a long time. They could have taken all they needed and taken off, not told anybody. Been way ahead of the people that would have come out, because nobody was coming out. But instead, they went back and they told everybody, the Syrians are gone, there's food out here, let's party. And the people did. And they connected again to the God who they knew who had done that. They connected again to the God of their ancestors, to the God that they had known. And they thanked God because he had delivered them that day in such a miraculous way. And these four lepers, doesn't show that they were celebrated or anything, but they got to live. Now that to me is so encouraging, because it's Johnny Canuck. It's just a regular working guy, you know, just he's on the outside of things, but he just is not a superstar. He's just doing what he thinks he should be doing, kind of against the tide a little bit, but they connect people to God. And it's a beautiful story of God's redemption and God's glory and God getting the glory for what he had done. Powerful stories. Both of them dealing with an enemy who is fear-based. We are dealing with an enemy that is fear-based right now. Where is this going to go? I don't know. But I don't have a sense that this is the end. I think we're getting a picture of how fast the end can come. I think we're being challenged to do the things that God calls us to do. Donna sent me an email from Lou Engels, and they're calling for people to join them in an Esther fast, which is complete fast, you know, just don't eat anything, for March 18th, 19th, and 20th, and then for people to meet and pray against the coronavirus on the 20th. And if you feel like God's calling you to that. I don't sense that we as a church need to do that as, you know, as one or anything. I don't need, you know, like, but there is some significance to it. And so I'm inviting you, if you feel it, a nudge, honor the nudge.
Yes.
Lou Engels, look it up and you'll find the stuff. And you may want to be a part of it. We've given up stuff for Lent, and we're following that. But what I feel like we're to do is our Thursday night healing time is if you have any concerns that you have coronavirus, do not isolate. Come on out, and we'll pray for you. I'll actually break down your physical space and lay hands on you. I'll really wash them after, but but we'll lay hands on you. And I believe that God will show us strong in this time. We will see healings, significant healings, as the enemy tries to raise its head and say, "Fear me. This thing is not a big deal." The people that lived through it say, it was sort of a middling sickness. You know, it wasn't like one of those flus where you think you're going, you know, like you wish you could die partway through it, you know? Not the bubonic plague. It's not the Black Death. It's not the Spanish flu. It's a respiratory illness or ailment that some of them are calling a pneumonia. There's you can avoid it if you want. It lands on dry throats. Dr. West told me this. It lands on dry throats. So just be sipping something every 10 minutes or so. And what happens with that virus is that you invite it to go to your stomach with the water or the tea or the coffee, whatever it is. Warm liquids work better than ice liquids. But you invite it to go to your stomach, and stomach acids eat it all. It disappears. It has no life anymore. This big, mean virus is gone. So you keep your throat moist, and you won't get it. You want to test and see whether you've got it or not? Hold your breath for 10 seconds. Listen to that. Hold your breath for 10 seconds. If you don't have to cough or really suppress a cough, you don't have the virus. That came out of Japan. Those are simple things, little connection things that take the fear of coronavirus and make it, it's just that, you know? It is not the scary thing that we're being told it is. It is not. Even if you get it, it's not that bad. The people that are dying are compromised physically anyway. They're not sharing that kind of stuff with us. Like I said to you about the Chinese men. Now, watch what your God is doing in the midst of this. It comes out of China. And there's a natural fear for most of the world. What's happening in China? The greatest revival that the world has ever seen than has happened anywhere else. And so you know what's happening in Wuhan? Christians are giving away. It goes a tract. And they read the tract, will heal them, and people are coming by the thousands to Jesus Christ in the virus. Do we serve a great God? U.S. press has told you that stuff. Whoa, they're dying over there. Everybody. I got a tract for you. It's about the God of all salvation who says, "Fear not, for I am with thee. Be not dismayed. I will keep you at my right hand." I will heal you. But that's like healing is just a small part of what he will give us. And it's amazing, our God. Yeah. Just about connecting to God again. Rich played us a beautiful song. He's not going to forget about you. He's not left you alone to deal with this. He's still your mighty God who can defeat this thing in a heartbeat. He is the... You got any illness, come on up. Good things happen through us. I think this is going to be a wonderful time. And right? Because he doesn't have authority. Dawson, you got to show up and I'll put you on the door. You can count. Pay no attention to that man behind the curtain. James works at Costco. He's feeling the empty shelf syndrome. God bless you for putting up with people. We're a bad bunch. It really is hard to believe. There was a thing in Facebook today that the local manager of the Save-On said, people, we have excellent supply chains. You can come here any day of the week and we will have food. There is no run on food. We are going to have fresh stuff every single day. Like, give your head a shake. It is so funny. Anyway, God is good all the time. And if we can but connect with him, like that whole anxiety thing, you know, look around, see five things, hear four things, smell three nice things. Oh. Yeah.